Ukrainian President Petro Poroshenko today publicly lifted his objections to a vote that would give more power to regions in the eastern part of the country, regions that have been the epicenter of the fighting with Russian-backed separatists for more than a year. Ukraine's parliament is drafting amendments to the country's constitution, and the president said that if the commission backs a vote, he won't stand in the way. The possible vote and other reform measures are part of the fragile ceasefire agreements reached in February. But President Poroshenko also said today that while he's willing to give more power to the regions, he's not entertaining federalization or separate states, something the rebels want. And by the way, that ceasefire has not meant an end to the fighting. And retired General Wesley Clark, the former NATO Supreme Commander who was in Ukraine recently, said he thinks the pro-Russian forces are actually getting ready for a new offensive to produce a victory that Russian President Vladimir Putin can celebrate on a specific date, May 9th. Patrick Tucker is technology editor for Defense One, the Atlantic's newsroom covering national security issues. And Patrick, pretty fascinating, but talk about the ceasefire first. You say Wesley Clark told Ukrainians that the organization charged with monitoring the ceasefire was filled with Russian officials who gamed it. The ceasefire was gamed.
Well, it's not so much Clark explaining that to the Ukrainians, as this is a pretty common complaint from members of the Ukrainian military and Ukrainian leadership. So the Ukrainians maintain that the Organization for Security and Cooperation in Europe is heavily infiltrated by Russian military and can't serve as an objective monitor of whether or not both parties are adhering to the ceasefire agreement. There have been some instances where OSCE monitors trying to take stock of where the different, you know, big pieces of weaponry are have actually been arrested and handcuffed and blindfolded by Kiev military, who are really skeptical that they're there actively reporting for OSCE and not on behalf of separatist forces.
So then there's that. And we'll talk a little bit more about equipment in a second and what the U.S. should be doing regarding equipment in its aid to Ukraine. But this notion that General Clark believes that pro-Russian forces are getting ready to mount a new military offensive to meet this May 9th deadline. What's that about?
So VE Day, or Victory Day, it's celebrated in the West on May 8th, but because of when the agreement was signed, it basically marks the end of an important phase of World War II. Because of when the agreement was signed, it's celebrated in May 9th in Russia. And it has, of course, huge symbolic significance in Russia as, you know, the moment when the great Soviet empire defeated the, you know, Hitler's regime, with help a little bit from the Allied forces. So to achieve a victory by that date to firmly acquire new defensible territories, or as I think they might frame it, to serve to protect Russian-speaking populations in eastern Ukraine and create for them a safe space where they can democratically annex themselves into Russia, that would be seen as an enormous symbolic victory. And also, this right now marks a period where a bunch of different other factors come into play. The ground has thawed and it's a little bit less wet. It's Ukraine is a bunch of sort of family farmed systems, so a lot of it is really rural. You can't move too much heavy equipment over ground that is too cold or certainly not too wet. That, in addition to the breakout period of May 9th, creates this window of Easter to the Russian celebration of VE Day on May 9th.
Well, how are those words being met? That's pretty shocking, the sense that Russia wants to annex much more of Ukraine by May 9th.
It is sort of remarkable. We've been talking a little bit about in the West about Mariupol as being the next obvious strategic target.
This is the port city.
Right, the port city. On the way to the annexed Crimean Peninsula from the Minsk II ceasefire line. So that's where Mariupol is. And what Clark is saying is actually the aspirations are much larger. He's not alone in that. There's several people in Ukraine that have said that they've seen a lot of new equipment being moved into the area on the Russian, pro-Russian side. As many as 22 tanks, a lot of human reinforcements. These are Russian soldiers that aren't operating efficiently initially they're on vacation, many of them, just showing up all of a sudden in the region, not part of any sort of official Russian military force, but they are, many of them, Russian military acting unofficially. And they claim that, you know, this is clear evidence of a violation of ceasefire. Now, the International Crisis Group on April 1st, they came out with a report saying that actually both sides are cheating a little bit. Both sides continue to kind of hide things from monitors. So equipment is moved away from the front line when the monitors are there, and then it's moved back into place. There is some fighting. There is some trading of rockets and gunfire. This takes place at night, when the monitors aren't around, and the monitors say we can't be around at night, it's not safe.
Well, just very briefly, Patrick, what is this information, how does this dovetail with the debate over the kind of aid that the U.S. should be giving? The Obama administration announced that they might be giving more than non-lethal aid, things like flak jackets. It might move into weaponry and lethal aid. What do we do with this new information from General Clark? How does that fit into that debate?
So on March 11th, the Obama administration announced a big aid package, including a bunch of Humvees. It's about $75 million in aid total, including some non-armed drones, little sort of throwable drones, and a few other things. It didn't include lethal aid. What Clark says is this. All right, prepare an aid package, a big one, including particularly radars that allow forces on the Ukrainian side to really get situational awareness on the heavy Russian-made artillery that's firing at them from a distance of like 7,000 meters, as much as that. Give them really good long-range radars. Put in this package that you're going to give to them some arms. We're talking about shoulder-fired missiles called javelins that you use against tanks. Put all of those in the package. Even if you don't send the package, have it ready so it can be quickly deployed. And that will serve perhaps as a disincentive. That will show, okay, if one side violates this agreement, this package is ready to go, and we're going to be able to send it right away. And that way, he can avoid actually giving the lethal arms directly before the Russian side violates the ceasefire agreement, in case they do. But they're ready to go just in case they do. And that could serve as a disincentive. And that's his recommendation.
Well, suddenly many eyes may be back on Ukraine. Patrick Tucker, technology editor for Defense One, the Atlantic's website that covers national security issues. Patrick, thank you.
Thank you.